Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 89, Short Treks, Escape Artist and Ephraim and Dot.
Argord Fenton Mudd, wanted by the Federation on 30 counts of smuggling, 20 counts of attempted homicide, 1 count of attempted regicide.
Regicide? He was a duke. Hardly counts as regicide. What are we attempting to murder now? Accuracy?
Transportation of stolen goods and 1 count of... penetrating a space whale?
You kind of had to be there.
Sipping jibbers on a beach
somewhere? Sipping jibbers on a beach.
Sipping jibbers on a beach
somewhere. Sipping jibbers on the beach somewhere.
I indeed also would like to be sipping jibbers on a beach.
Oh, sipping jibbers on the beach somewhere. Sipping jibbers.
There was that one that was blue and it's got like a lemon in it or something. Looks all right.
You're talking about the guy who was just like jibbers on a beach. Jibbers on a beach.
There was one guy
on
a beach. There was one guy in the background all jumping up and down all like, yay! Hooray! Jibbers on the beach. Hooray! That's how he looked.
And you know what else is hooray? Hooray! For the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Oh, right? That's what we do.
That is what we're doing
this
right now.
This is the podcast.
This here, is. Right now, official like, the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I believe we are all the way down deep into
episode. I heard that was a funny podcast.
It is a funny podcast. I heard that too. Episode 89.
89.
This is the
89, dude.
89. You're always telling the audience to go fuck themselves.
I was telling you to go fuck yourself.
Oh, okay, well, that's fine. I can accept that.
Then the audience can go, just kidding. I'm gonna
say that. So, 80. This is what keeps you around, this sort of abusive behavior towards our fans. All right, so episode 89.
It's good to abuse the fans.
It's Got
that
Star
Dave
Trek
guy's
podcast.
Always talking shit about us.
So
yeah, Dave.
Dave. Yes, we are discussing 2 short treks today. We're doing short treks.
We've only ever talked about 1 short trek.
Yeah, we did The Trouble with Edward, I think, back in episode 67 of the podcast, I want to say, somewhere directly.
That sounds good.
Scroll down that list and you will find it. But today we are doing The Escape Artist and Ephraim and... Dot. 2 separate short treks.
Dot.
2 very different short treks.
Is it Ephraim or is it Ephraim?
Ephraim. Ephraim. Ephraim.
Ephraim.
Right in
is it
to
Ephraim?
Feedback
a female
at itsgotstartrek.com.
Ephraim.
And let us know how to Ephraim. Properly pronounce Ephraim.
Ephraim.
Dot we're pretty solid on, I think.
What
all
rhymes
right.
with Ephraim?
No, it's when pronounced dot.
A yeah. female deer.
All right. So we will... We'll get right into it. We'll get right into the escape artist.
No dilly dallying.
We're snot. Not dilly dallying because
female snot.
That's
what did you say, Jesse?
Wait,
what the fuck did you say?
Are you saying
what did I say?
Do you want me to say what I think you said? Because
is he parrying?
I said dot a snot instead of doe a deer.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you said like vagina snot.
Oh no!
But now you did. Damn it.
Yeah, I know. I didn't want to say it, but like,
I'll know the explicit. This
we
is
can take.
Explicit
we can.
Podcast.
You can take it out. You can take it out.
I'm not taking that out.
And then isolate that.
You isolate and push that little button. Play Boop. It over and over, over and over. All right, The Escape Artist. This was directed by Rainn Wilson. It starred Rainn Wilson as Harcourt Fenton Mudd.
And he's already been in 2. Episodes of Discovery by the time this comes out. Is that right?
At least the one. I can't remember if this, I remember, but yeah. Yeah. He was
no,
in the,
because he, cause it talks about him like penetrating a whale.
Yeah. He was definitely in
that
the,
was on this one.
The no.
But that's in
this
reference
one
to
talks
the one
it.
We saw about magic and the
magic
man.
To make the sanest man go mad. I believe the 7th episode of the 1st season of Discovery.
Yeah.
When he does
that's
all that
his,
time shenanigans.
Yeah, space whale.
That's
yeah.
his second appearance because first you yeah. meet him in a Klingon jail.
Yeah.
Jailhouse.
And we discussed that episode in episode 27
did,
of the podcast.
Yeah.
Klingon, a gulag?
Episode 27.
Something like
that. Is a gulag a bad word?
Yeah, the magic to make the sanest man go mad. That's the last time we saw him, or at least that's the reference to the penetrating a whale thing.
Yeah.
So we've already seen Rainn Wilson as this character, but he was able to put this together during the first run of the short trek. So this is like 2019. I forget exactly when. I think January-ish.
Did you ever see that movie, The Rocker?
The Rocker.
It was with Rainn Wilson. He played a drummer. He was a drummer, wow. But
I bet it was good.
The deal was he was like an older, like older guy, but in this young kid's band, like young as in like they're 20 or whatever, you know, they're like the young new hot thing. And he's some like leftover kind of. Anyway, sorry. Yeah, that's the rocker.
All right. Do you have any other Rainn Wilson movie recommendations? Because he's been in a number of other movies. I was just wondering if you wanted to get it out of your system.
Wasn't he in that movie about killing people where he was he was like a good guy that he ripped people's arms off?
Yeah. Yeah. I believe it.
Like it wasn't Kick-Ass. It was like something else.
He got his arm ripped off in this one.
It's like Superhero or something. He did.
That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. But
that's all I have to say about Rainn Wilson.
He's one of those guys that he looks different every time and you see him and you're like, I know I've seen that guy, but. And then you have trouble picturing him in other roles because you're so focused on what you're seeing because he's, you know.
But the thing is with him, I always
know. He's totally hardcore Fenton Mudd. Like.
Yeah, he is. But I always know it's Rainn Wilson. It's unlike Gary Oldman, who's like classically like just like, wait, that's Gary Oldman.
You know who it is, but he, you know, like in real life, he doesn't look like any of the characters he plays. I mean, I know that's
it's, he's a versatile, it's acting, he's a but versatile
like,
actor.
You know, the best actors are, you know, you almost don't recognize them in real life. They're like,
I'd recognize Tom Cruise in real life.
Yeah, well, what did I just say?
He'd probably be saving people left and right.
Yeah.
He's always saving people.
With big smile on his face.
Big smile, saving people. He looks all stern and then he saves the person, then he smiles.
Eating planets or something.
All right, so now they're kind of going to come after us. We don't need that.
Oh, no.
We don't need those people.
Oh, no.
But so
I really did it now, Jesse.
I placed this short trek, The Escape Artist, right at the top of my list of all the short treks, and I'm fond of them all, and from one perspective or another. But this and The Trouble with Edward, they're my favorites. The Trouble with Edward is such a bizarre concept, and H. John Benjamin is so hilarious that it does very well. But in this one, the directing is clever and creative. The comedic timing is all zip, zip, zap, zoop, super snappy. Rainn Wilson is great. All the other actors are fantastic, especially, you know, most of them are wearing crazy makeup.
Like Telluride.
Yeah, the Telluride fella.
Telluride, there was some, I don't know if it was Voyager or what show it was where they were making fun of.
They're on Discovery a lot.
Or was it DS9 where they were talking about how, like, they were dissing on Tellurites?
The Ferengi, I think.
No, they were dissing on Bolians.
Yeah, the Ferengi were dissing on Bolians. Yeah.
So, but I thought there was someone
everyone
saying,
disses on the
someone
Bolians.
Was like, you couldn't even out-strategize a Tellurite.
Yeah, that was in The Magnificent Ferengi.
Oh, that was Bolian, but I swear someone else said something about Tellurites.
Can't we ambush a couple of Bolians?
Mm. Yeah, right. But I think they said about Tellurites, not in that episode, somewhere else. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Tellurites.
Whatever I say, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. I didn't say it. Don't judge me. Unless it's funny, then judge me and like me.
Yeah. Please do not judge.
Tellurites are really gruff. Like especially this fellow's especially gruff.
I like the imagery of him, like, you know,
he's
rubbing
got,
his face.
They got tusks and stuff.
His having sex with his sister, rubbing his face.
Oh, yeah.
The great thing is it's like, we don't even know if he had sex with his sister. Like, he might have, he might not have. But at first he denies it. Then he's like, okay, I did have sex with her. But you still somehow don't know if he did or not. Because you're wondering.
I'm presuming he did.
I honestly don't know because, like, he's manipulates
what
the
was the name of the Tellurite? I'm trying to remember.
It was like
something.
Anytime I try to, I can't remember the name of a Star Trek character. I can only think of Groppler Zorn. It's the only name that comes to mind. It's like Groppler Zorn. It's like, I know it's not Groppler Zorn because I know precisely who Groppler Zorn is.
It's Tevren Krit.
Tevren Krit. That's why I was thinking Groppler Zorn.
And I just
because it's a similar syllable.
Isn't that guy like Topper Shut?
That's indifferent. No, I just I'm just saying that
it's a local weatherman.
And I see, honestly, I don't know if he like had sex with her because everything he says is a lie. Everything's a fabrication. Yeah. He just wants to keep everyone confused.
But Tevren Krit claimed it. That's why I believe it. If it was just him saying it, then no problem. But Tevren Krit was saying, "I'm mad at you for two reasons. One, you stole my sexy family generational cudgel."
Cudgel. It's hilarious they picked cudgel of all things.
It is hilarious they picked cudgel. It's also,
scepter or something.
He said, I've passed it. He was like, my father gave this to me and his father gave it to him. And we've been passing it down for generations for over 100 years. Does that mean Tellurites have short lifespans? I don't know if that's a canon thing, but he's talking about generations. It's only 100 years, right? That's a few generations, but I mean, no offense. it's, I think it takes a few more generations than that to qualify as like bounty hunter level, go after artifact situation.
Well, what do we know about Tellarites? We don't know much about them, do we? They're kind of
tertiary.
They're one
of the founders of the Federation, Jenks.
Yeah, and like Andorians, before Enterprise and later Discovery, they are under paid attention to. They are underrepresented. Yeah. I think unfairly. Because
they look really weird.
And the makeup is expensive.
Yeah.
Right? It's like you can either make them look stupid or right, and right is expensive. And stupid still costs money.
Imagine being like Michael Dorn and having to put on all that makeup every day, and then like Jonathan Frakes just, you know, waltzes in there.
Saunters in. Yeah. Saunters in. Lip puts his leg over the top of the chair. Sits down. He's like, "Hi, Michael. Fuck you."
He's already been in like 4 or 5 hours of makeup.
I'm already ready to go.
Anyways, okay, yeah, okay. Given that he saw it, makes it more likely. It makes it more likely.
What makes it more
what
likely?
It makes it more likely that he had sex with her sister. Oh, okay. Sorry.
You're really good at picking up a thought 5 minutes later. That's pretty amazing. Well, I was totally lost there.
Yeah, we can just kind of gotta come. You can branch off the rails, but you gotta come back to the rails. That's not how trains work.
Trains work, Jesus.
Oh, you don't want your train to do that.
Space train is that?
Oh, what are you doing? I'm just gonna get off these rails. Well, don't worry, we'll come back to them. Don't worry, I know where they are.
Space rail.
That's a funky train, baby.
Setting horrific analogy.
I broke into 17 parts, like pretty much like the beat, the direction, the what kind of happened in terms of what mud.
17 parts.
All right.
Let's give us
like
the rundown. 17
step program.
Give us the rundown.
So how mud is in this particular interaction. This is not counting the cutaway interactions or whatever. So it starts aggressive. He's threatening. Mud threatens that he's like powerful and he's going to fuck him up. You know, that starts with aggressive. Then he tries to negotiate with the bounty hunter saying he'll pay double. We find out that's a ruse. Everything's a lie. That's a ruse. He was one of his, one of his own tactics. He was smart enough to know that he was shameless about his tactics enough that he could use them as a ruse and it would be effective. That number three, he plays stupid after that. It's like he doesn't know, he doesn't know Tellarites. He doesn't even know what a cudgel is, even though his vocabulary is such that anyone would find that hard to believe. Four, then he starts to say, oh, wait, you got the wrong guy. You got the wrong guy. And then,
five.
Oh, I was going to say, that's five. You're right.
I'm just guessing. Following a pattern, you know, like when you kid, they're like, what's the next number in the pattern?
Crit just said, listed off all of his crimes to him, being like, you know.
Penetrating a space whale.
He was like regicide, but he was just a duke.
Duke. Right.
What are we, trying to kill? Accuracy?
Yeah, what are we attempting to murder now?
You're
accuracy?
Right,
yeah, transportation stolen goods, basically saying that you got the wrong man, and he's like, nope, you got all these other charges. Next he starts to negotiate with Crit. He's trying to talk it out, work together, combine forces. He can help him find the cudgel that he totally didn't steal, but he's like saying, I'll help you find it. I'm going to offer you my service and I'll help you find it. The next one is number six. He denies that he has ever been in a situation like this before, even though he listed all the charges a minute ago. You guys can interrupt or stop me whenever you want. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep going.
No, I find this fascinating. I'm kind of curious what comes after number six.
Okay, six is seven.
All right.
That comes after six.
It's getting a little bit predictable.
Okay.
I heard that seven, eight, nine.
Predictable is not necessarily bad. It can be comforting. Like a good old episode of Midsummer Murders. You know,
I've never seen that show.
Somebody's.
I think we got to start watching.
You're gonna have three murders, and in the end, it'll all be figured out.
So six. It was just denied that he had ever been in anything like this before. Even
good advice.
You know, he's like, I've never been in this before. And then, after that, number seven, the new one. He said he's being falsely accused because he has a reputation. Okay, he says my reputation precedes me. That's why I'm being accused of this. But what reputation precedes him? Mm. Was it a reputation for doing bad shit? Maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe he has a reputation because he does bad shit. How did he get that reputation if he never did anything bad? And he's like, well, I'm memorable. Just being chatty doesn't make everyone, you know, suddenly think that you're, you know, this terrible fucking asshole that, like, commits crimes and does all this shit. So
maybe he just thinks he's a scoundrel. Going around stealing people's wines.
Yeah, nothing illegal. Just being a dick about it.
Picking their pockets, doing a little of this, buy that. A little of that. He's no cudgel thief.
He's a rogue. He's a scoundrel.
It's all scuttlebutt and hogwash, I assure you.
Scuttlebutt. Mm.
So what's the next number up?
8 is he finally admits he had sex with the sister.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's what he's saying. But yeah, I see your point. It's likely he did. But he sets it up as if he had forgotten. He's like, oh, yeah, you're right. I did have sex with your sister. Oh, yeah.
And then subtly and slowly switches into, like, super details.
Yeah, talking about
from, like, pretending to not remember to having super details.
Yeah, like her feeling stubble and her horn on his face and stuff, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, 9 is now the cudgel, he remembers the cudgel, too. The cudgel was taken to remember his love for her. So he loved her so much. He forgot about this girl. Then right. He remembered her and decided he loved her so much that now he remembers the cudgel, too. And he took that, you know, I guess he only wanted to remember their love for a little bit. Number 10, more negotiation.
Number 10.
Before it was, I'll join you to help you find your cudgel. That's what Mud was saying. Now it's all, join me and my big important secret group. I have a, you know, anti-federation group that we know the truth, basically. So before he was offering to help him find something, now he's more like, no, come to my side. I'm important, you know? And then there starts to be bigger holes in his story now. Like, why was he low on funds? What did he use it for? I guess you could just say secret getting federation shit. I was low on funds. We have this big organization and we needed the money from selling a cudgel to fund our, you know, big giant secret mission. It's, you know, starting to fall apart a little.
It's been some cudgel.
Yeah, it
was pretty cool, I thought.
I bet
it smashed pretty good.
Once you see it, yeah. You could bust some heads up with that thing.
Number 11, he's negotiating again, this time offering companionship to work together. This time they're working together with their shared goal of being righteous, you know. Number 12.
That was with that funny little alien.
Oh, is that when it cut away to her?
Yeah, I think so. He was trying to get her to...
Yeah, to join forces against... Yeah, yes, you're right.
Yeah, that was the moment.
And she lost her spaceship.
Number 12, he goes to complimenting. He's like, you know, you're special. I see we have a lot in common. You know, it's complimenting his shit. Then 13, it goes to Crit heard that Mud is rich, his reputation, because his reputation precedes him. You know, he's told people that in situations where he needs to.
If he had any money, he'd be sipping jippers on a beach.
That's absolutely true.
On a beach somewhere.
In this case, it's to his advantage to be poor. So he's just whatever kind of like he needs to be. He'll say whatever. It doesn't matter. He can, if anyone tells him otherwise, he'd say, no, don't believe them. They're lying. You know, 14. He's providing motivation to Crit as to why they should be on the same side. Oh, I hate the Federation too. They took my money. You know, that's motivation. 15 are getting close.
okay.
Getting close. No, it doesn't end in a climax, but just telling you, we're almost there. Getting close.
I'm kind of curious if 17 is going to be like super awesome.
No, it's not.
Or if it's just going to be steady. Steady as she goes.
Maybe.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
It's just steady.
We're going to find out pretty soon.
Well, now it just can't possibly. 15, I just have written, I am the poorest man you've ever met. I guess he's just saying he's pathetic. Anyway, 16, that leads to 16 where he resorts to begging. He's appealing to his code of conduct, you know, he's made that up, just sort of like appealing to sympathy. Mm. You know, he apologizes for the cudgel, appeals to his ego. He's like, Tellarites are better than this. They should do better. So he's saying, you're better. Then he starts to other form of begging, saying he'll do anything for him. And this part gets a little pathetic. It's like, no shame. He's like, I'll lick your tusks or whatever. And then the last one, it all ends with he gets beamed over for him. And all of a sudden, right when he gets beamed over, he switches his whole story around and just says, curse the day I met your pig-faced sister. And I apologize for this disgusting space homunculus.
Yes, and he's in a new environment and a new power structure.
So now
the power structure is the Federation. So he immediately shifts to be like, I'm going to try to get myself on the same side as this guy right here.
Exactly, and that's the punchline sort of that episode, is that he has no use to lie to that guy anymore. So it just shows how everything he does is just for pure, just personal gain. He will lie and doesn't give a shit, and he's absolutely shameless about it. And that kind of got capped that off at the end.
And then his arm falls off.
Yeah, then his arm gets pulled off.
And everything goes wild.
Everything goes wild, and there's that brilliant slow pan in to the room full of mud bots, and then the slow pan out. It's just one, you know, where they're all like, drippers on a beach, drippers on a beach. It really gives you that sense of, ugh, it's like, this is intense, and the crazy music is going on.
Yeah.
And Rainn Wilson, you know, he's got all this production design, like the full bore, high budget production design of a modern Star Trek show. He's in an Orion dungeon. He's in a giant warehouse with this crazy alien who has really excellent alien makeup on, right? He's got the Klingon. He's got this. He's on a Tellarite ship, and he directs it kind of partly like a sitcom and partly like a sci-fi adventure drama. And what I mean by that is that he's showing these fantastical things, like being held prisoner in an Orion dungeon. But the way he's directing it, it comes off more grounded. It comes off more like, okay, you know, with the guard, he's trying to bribe the guard, and that's kind of cheesy. Mm. And then the other Orion comes in and is like, you moron, we have a camera. We're watching you
get just bribed by this guy. Exasperated. You're just messed up.
And it makes it seem very grounded and relatable, which I think is fun. But at the same time, it's juxtaposed with this crazy green makeup and dungeon atmosphere.
Yeah, and the dude Mud, space dungeon, the dude Mud is hanging by his arm, and you see that his feet are clearly off the ground. That shit's gotta hurt, and he's just like, oh, well, no, wait, I'll make another funny deal, you know.
And then
like,
they zap him.
And they zap him, yeah.
He's always getting fucked up in each of these little vignettes that he's remembering. He's getting fucked up.
Speaking of view screens, how about that view screen on that Tellarite ship?
Yeah, I loved that it was like, oh, okay, they're signifying that he has a shitty ship primarily through the view screen.
Yeah, it's
right because
it's almost like you feel like you're blind, like you can't see anything at all. Because it's like, at least in the, you know, in the Enterprise, it feels like, oh, this is simulating a window or something, you know. But like, this is just a little TV.
Maybe it's how their eyes are positioned or something. Maybe Tellarites have weirdly positioned eyes
that they demand small screens.
But I don't think so. I think you're right. I think that, you know, if you see a Klingon bird of prey, you might think, oh, it looks all sort of musty and dirty in there, but you wouldn't equate that with, this is a shitty ship. You'd equate that with, like, Klingons are just into that. So I think, in order to avoid us doing that with a Tellarite, to understand he's on a crappy little ship, they gave it a really small view screen, like, with an annoying aspect ratio. It's just unacceptable. And it's just, I think it's especially acutely funny because these were produced during the Discovery era, right? And what is Discovery known for? Having giant view screens, hilariously giant view screens on all those ships because they're all like super mega widescreen view screens. So they went the opposite direction with this and made the Tellarite have this ridiculous little almost square view screen, and it just aggravated me so much.
It definitely had a much more sort of industrial kind of, I don't know, sort of, yeah, that look of just of like a garbage ship or something, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was
probably like, smells
it was worn.
I wish Tellarites
probably smell funny. Mm-hmm.
Certainly that was the implication by Mud, but as you noted, Dan, he lies a lot.
Yeah.
And he's an asshole. I mean, he's a piece of shit. I mean, we must not forget, Mud, by all accounts, is a complete piece of shit. He's put all sorts of people's lives in danger and scammed all these people.
It was interesting how at the end, when he was still dressed as the bounty hunter, and he was being served by himself.
Yes.
Himself, who he would later sell out. It was symbolic of, right, like, with those copies of him, it's like he would sell himself out to save himself.
Yes.
But
it was brilliant.
Yeah, I know.
There's like some kind of mud head hooked up to something.
Yeah,
there's a mud head. Running some part of the ship.
And yeah, there's that one at the beginning. That's weird. And then there's that one coming to serve him and refers to him as ma'am.
And he's having a good time. And I point out how shitty he is as a person because, nevertheless, he's charming, and
he has good ideas.
He's an and Rainn Wilson does an even better job than I forget who is the gentleman in you remember his name in TOS who played Mud, because he was good too. He had that kind of smarmy charm.
Charm
is the only guest character in TOS that appears on two episodes. Yeah.
He did a good job, but Rainn Wilson does, I think, a better job of endearing himself to the audience, his rascaliness.
Yeah.
Even though he is doing pretty terrible things, both in TOS and where we've seen him in Discovery and in this particular short track.
But actually, when you first meet him in TOS, he's got some kind of android thing going on, yes, with the women. Mud's
women.
So this was sort of...
Or that was a continuation of this, right, in a sense. Maybe that's a more modern version of...
Yeah. Because this would have been like a decade earlier.
So it's Roger C. Yeah. Roger C. Carmel.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Carmel.
Carmel.
Yeah, Roger C. Carmel. Original Mud. So Mud.
Original Mud.
So Mud, he's got himself this great crazy setup, right? Which is brilliant. And as you noted, Dan, is the whole like he's selling himself out. But at a more basic level, he's got a bounty on his head. So he's selling versions of himself to trick people to go to, because they want to turn in the bounty. So he's getting rewarded for that. And I wonder, just in terms of the incentive structure, it would actually make sense for him to want to have his bounty go up to continue, if he can to continue this scheme, because the higher the bounty, the more he can charge for like the robots that he sends out. Although you could argue maybe he can only do that so many times before it stops working.
I mean, I guess where's his level of, where does he draw the line in danger? Like how much danger he'll face? Because he puts himself in danger by virtue of the fact that he's like in all these crazy scenarios. Yeah. But that danger, he doesn't see, you don't see that kind of danger until it's too late.
Yeah.
But immediate danger, he runs away from. If it's immediate danger, he runs away from. So he's constantly ignoring the potential for danger. And then danger catches up to him and he's like, oh, danger, gotta run. And he's just constantly running from his own decisions, you know?
Yeah, so when it gets out of his control a little bit, because he's dressing up as the bounty hunter, he's disguising himself and interacting with the people who want to buy him, who want to capture him and turn him over to the Federation. So there's a certain bravery there, but there's also, he has control as far as he understands in that situation. But as soon as he loses that control, then he starts reverting into the classic Dan 17 step, series, you know, it's like the various stages of grief,
the 17,
the 17 stages of Harry Mud.
Yeah. That's good. It's a thing that we were talking about just now.
Something.
Jesus, there's something wrong with my head.
We were just discussing.
We were just talking about Harry Mudd. What were we just saying?
He's a rascally fellow.
He's a scamp.
He's a scamp.
He's a space scamp. Harry Mudd. Running space around bum. The universe, doing all sorts of crazy stuff.
Oh yeah, I was talking about how he's like running from danger, and you were talking about like how he comes across something.
This is the recap section of the podcast.
He comes across something.
Recapping.
Like they do in Star Trek.
Earlier in the podcast, like when they watched, we're doing that now.
Right now.
Can we listen? When will then be now?
Can we listen to it to be sure that...
Yeah, we should stop the recording and then cut that out and then play it over again just to make sure we know what we're talking about.
I just can't remember what you said after, like I said, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It just drives me crazy because I'm like, my brain is like...
It's okay. Everyone's brains go a little weird from time to time.
Oh, I know what I was going to say.
See, that's how it works.
He makes a nice little racket, too, because he was had a $100,000 bounty on his head, and he was selling for $50,000, $60,000. He said 62 of the first bounty hunter, which was himself, and I'm guessing that's $60,000. And I guess that's how much Targ paid, whatever. But then there was another one later who was working out for $50,000. So I think he makes about $50,000. It's like if catching the real Mud is $100,000, all he does is have to keep sending these androids out of $50,000.
So how many androids were just in that one Federation ship's hold, which presumably is just in that area. But
the look on that Starfleet dude's face when he saw him come in,
again, another great scene in terms of bringing it down to, you know, grounding it, you know, making it seem a little bit more relatable and everyday, you know, just the exasperation at like, okay, not only do I have to deal with this robot, I gotta let down this poor Tellarite guy. He seems all excited. He's asking like for the Venmo. You know, he's trying to give me his Venmo account.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Do you just email the money to me? Would you give it to me in one whole bar?
Is Jipper a real drink? Is that something they made?
Nah, it's something made up. But somebody's got there's recipes.
Somebody's
online.
Come up with that. Yeah, totally.
And I definitely want to sip some Jippers on a beach somewhere. And this was again part of the great comedic timing and all that of this particular episode was they have two punchlines because they have the Jipper punchline and then the cudgel punchline.
Yeah.
And cudgel. they don't conflict with each other. It can be hard to do that. In fact, you could argue maybe they shouldn't have done that here. But that's, I think Rainn Wilson and Mike McMahon manage it in this case. They get the double punchline.
Mike McMahon.
They got a Jipper and they got a cudgel. But it's not a Jipper on a beach. But it's as close as
he's
you're going to get.
He's getting some Jippers, though.
And he's looking at a starry. It's beautiful stars.
Here's your
they
Jipper.
Make it look kind of beachy outside.
I wonder how substantial that cudgel prop is anyways.
How substantial is your cudgel prop?
It looked like it was really heavy.
Yeah, I don't know.
It might have just been paper mache.
You can knock someone's teeth out with it.
Yeah, that'd be fucked up. To hit someone in the face with a cudgel?
Get your teeth cudgeled out.
Oh, fuck that.
Rainn Wilson gets in trouble because he cudgels somebody. It's like, I accidentally cudgeled somebody on set, and now they're not inviting me back. They're going to recast
cudgel that
Mud.
Garg Menargar.
Garg Menargar.
Tarv
Satan. I'm going to use my ballistics, and I'm going to use my bludgeoning tools.
Bludgeon.
With my cudgel. And I'm gonna
bludgeon you with
my
cudgel.
Where's my flail? I need my flail.
I think it's.
Where do you come up with this stuff?
I think it's notable. I think it's notable that both this short trek, The Escape Artist, and The Trouble with Edward, they both score very highly on the non-Trek fan scale.
Oh, that's cool.
Which was developed by my wife. And basically, she's willing to watch. She's always willing to watch Star Trek, but sometimes she's willing to watch it and actually enjoy it. And this was one of those episodes where she actually enjoyed it. It was only occasionally impeded by her repeated exclamations, variations on, "Wait, is that Dwight? Is that Dwight?"
my wife likes to talk back to the Star Trek and be like, "What? Why are you doing that? You're the worst captain."
That's awesome.
You're the worst security officer.
Yeah, damn, you right. know, you can definitely nitpick a lot of what goes on in there. But a lot of folks like I think short treks are great for a variety of reasons. One being there are some stories that just fit in this time frame, you know, in this time span. And it's great to have an opportunity to have those stories. But the other is as an entryway to Star Trek, to non-Star Trek fans, people who want to come to the audience, you know, they can get a few flavors and be like, look, these are variations on a theme and check it out. And if you like it, hey, maybe you'll enjoy some of the other stuff too.
How tall is Rainn Wilson known to be tall? Because he seemed like,
I thought so.
Cause like Crit, the scene.
Garg Menargar.
Garg Menargar.
Tavern Crit.
Tavern
Crit.
There was a scene right when they opened the door for the Jippers on the beach room. And, you know, and he ripped his arm off. Like, yeah. there's a shot where they are, like, right next to each other. Unless there's some kind of trickery going on with steps or something, it looks like Tavern Crit's really short and Rainn Wilson is really tall.
Tellarites are shorter.
Are they?
They're little shorter, stockier.
Little pig people.
I'm going to look
up
Rainn.
Tuskier.
A little pig man.
A little more tusky. They look, they're kind of like those bad guys in the original Zelda.
That's all,
yeah,
folks.
They are.
You know, that stomp around.
Yeah, they are. He's 6'2", Rainn Wilson is.
Man, that's decent.
I believe
decently
it.
Tall.
I believe you.
What is that in meters for our rest of the world audience?
2 meters.
It's not too.
It's about
2 meters. You're right. It's about 2 meters.
Word. I'm about 6'2" myself. So
you're about 2 meters.
I got about 2 meters on me.
All right, 2 meters.
What's the name of the actor that played that Tellarite?
2 meters? Was his name 2 meters?
Tavern Crit actor.
His name was Tavern 2 meters Johnson.
Harry Judge. Now I'm going to look up. Harry Judge height.
Don't look at that with Safe Search off.
Harry Judge. I'm going to judge height. Judge's height. Oh, all night. Yeah, I don't know. I don't see any height information. That's a real bummer.
All right. So we don't have the height information.
I mean, maybe
Harry,
it's
Harry
maybe
Judge
it's
the Tellarite.
Maybe it's out there, but it's not worth spending any more
Dan,
time.
Dan, I'm going to tell you something. You're out there.
Oh wow.
You're out. I think you're out.
Oh
there.
You. I oh you.
You are out to lunch.
All right. So anything else about this particular short trek before we move along?
Can we run through those 17 stages?
Yeah, do we need to recap those 17 stages
in random order? And
of Harry Mudd?
And if I repeat one by accident, I have to start over again.
Yeah.
I thought I liked when Mudd was talking to the captor, the Orion captor, and he was like, luxuriously green, a delectable lime.
Yeah. I thought that was really... that was probably my favorite scene. Everything about that, the actors and the setup was funny. And his that stupid but somehow still funny line about your friends will be green with envy. Well, greener.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. I mean, presumably that's a racist thing to say. I don't know. Maybe not.
I would think so.
It seems to me. The way he said it.
Seems to me.
You were talking about a couple episodes ago, you were talking about blue-green ensigns.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so what?
Orion. Was it an Orion and a Bolian?
Walk into a bar?
No, they make a baby.
They make a blue-green baby.
A blue-green
Starfleet.
It's like sort of like a sea-green.
Sea green run. Run green run.
Like a pleasant.
A seafoam green.
Seafoam green.
The best, most versatile color on the internet. Seafoam green.
All right.
Seafoam and a green.
This nonsense suggests to me that we are ready.
We got to go to the next one. Yes.
Move along home to.
Move along.
Ephraim and Dot.
Ephraim.
Ephraim and Dot. Ephraim and Dot. Ephraim. However you'd like
Andy,
to say it.
Andy Ephraim.
We are going to talk about this animated episode.
Why are you talking in a rhythm?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Did you notice both of these short treks? I don't know if all of them are like this. They have a zazz added to the opening. Like the Ephraim and Dot had some robot pings and dings, a little whistle at the beginning.
Oh, we did forget to mention the escape artist had that disco jazz.
Yeah, it was like some kind of 70s disco strings.
Jeff Russo doing some crazy.
The Telluride was listening to disco.
Disco strings.
Disco strings. But all right, Ephraim and Dot. This is the one that was directed by Michael Giacchino.
This was the one.
The fellow, the really great music composer, music composer. He did all the music for the three modern, quote-unquote, Abramverse.
That guy. You know that guy.
Kelvin timeline fellow. You know, he did all those movies. He's done a lot of Pixar movies. Done a lot of
Pixar.
Other. Yeah.
Does, you can pick your friend's Star Wars. You can pick your friend's nose, but you can't pick your
picks and chose.
Well, he directed this animated short trek. This animated short trek.
Shorter.
He also did the music for this animated short.
Which was fun.
It's kind of Looney Tunes-y.
It is. Except there's one Disney part.
And there's a Hanna-Barbera part.
I didn't notice that. The Disney part is when they play the TOS theme. And after, I think it's when he finds the warm room, the radioactive room or whatever, where he can lay his egg.
Oh, that is kind of Disney.
I think that's where that happened. I think it was in the warp core, but it was like some kind of Disney TOS theme to make it seem like, you know, he's found, it's nature found its home and stuff. But then went back to a lot of Looney Tunes.
All right. So real quick, before we,
what was the Hanna-Barbera one?
Yeah, I want the Hanna-Barbera one.
We're going to get there.
Just hold on.
At this stage, we have lost the plot on this particular episode, and that's fine. But we can pretend.
We never got it.
We can pretend to have some mild amount of structure. In this case, Ephraim and Dot, just to explain.
It's hard to agree.
It's the basic premise is, which you've already seen it. You know what the
seen
basic
it, don't
is,
spleen
but,
it,
but just
man.
To get you mentally into the space because it's good for you know you get seen the, it. You get the audience mentally into the space,
and I believe
even though they've seen it, you still want to get them orient them.
I
right?
seen them, seen it.
So Ephraim and Dot, it is about
Andy Ephraim,
a tardigrade.
Who's Andy Ephraim?
A tardigrade. It gets into the USS Enterprise, the original Constitution
the
class.
NCC 1701.
And this tardigrade looks super cute here, but really they're gross and smushy.
Yeah. They can be both cute and gross. And well, they're not smushy. Do you mean smushy as in they smush things?
They look like they're all, like, their skin looks like, has that smushy poltergeist movie skin.
Poltergeist, Jesus fucking Christ, man. Water bears are like microscopic.
Yeah, but the big ones, like the big ones that go through the...
All right. It's a horrifying image, and poltergeist skin.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But real quick, how big do you think this one was? Because
it was pretty big. I think it was big.
Do you think this was like big. A normal size
I think
one?
Those robots are like...
Human size?
No, but I think they're like 3 feet tall. I think the cleaner robots.
Well, that's probably true.
I think it is an issue based on
what you see in Discovery. You see,
precisely. But the
Discovery one was even bigger than that, though. The Discovery one.
The thing, though, here is that it's difficult to tell the scale without a context from outside this thing. So that is a limitation of this animation.
And I'm with you on like this about approximate size. I was thinking more like the size of a human, but now I'm thinking much smaller because there's a part where there's Khan is there, that part where they revisit Khan, he's in that room, and you see a shot of both Ephraim and Dot from out. I think it's both of them, but it's at least a frame, or which we don't know which is which, do we?
Yeah, no, Dot is the
Dot's
robot.
Dot's the robot. Okay.
The DOT stands for like
Duba Robot. Yeah,
Department of Transportation or something.
I was thinking Dot, you know, it's either that or it's a frame because it's a fancy robot, or Dot.
It's a fancy robot, which is not wearing a tuxedo.
But then I was thinking that the tardigrade was Dot because it's a she, but that's being really gender normative about it. So
totally.
It makes yeah. Anyway, so Dot is at least Ephraim the tardigrade was outside the window. Inside, Kirk was talking with Spock and Khan.
I haven't even gotten through the basic plot. I know what you're saying.
I'm just saying that part. The scaling looked like they were next to a window.
Yeah,
and it made it look like the window looked like it was a torso and a head tall.
Yeah,
basically.
like a decent sized window.
Yeah, well, like at least
and
torso
then
the,
in
and head,
relation
yeah.
to their
and in relation to this thing, it was about the third of a size of that, so it made it seem smaller. Right. I was confused about that scale. I just don't understand the scale.
We'll never have a 100% answer, but I think we've come closer to resolving what is clearly the most important thing to determine in this, which is the scale of these creatures.
Okay.
However,
it's not a teeny tiny tardigrade.
Based on Discovery and how big that tardigrade was, and based on Discovery and the presumed sort of perceived sizes of their version of those Dot robot cleaning spaceship fixing robots, we can presume them to be pretty big, right? Because this appears to be an adult tardigrade.
Based on that information, it appears to be so.
But that's outside information. So,
but if you include,
we're not going to call it a critique, but it's an observation.
I'm just saying that
you need extra information,
right?
In order to view this animation.
I'm just saying that like that part next to the window adds a little wild card to it. It's like, huh, that's interesting. It's like all the evidence points to it's one thing, but then there's that one piece that seems like it's disagreeing with. You know what I'm saying?
No, I know what you're saying. I just think it's hilarious because I'm also aggravated about this, and then I'm slowly realizing that probably the bulk of our audience is much more well adjusted than you or I are. because I was just like watching. I was like, how what is the scale of this thing? Logically, they should be huge, but I don't.
Logically, they should be huge, right?
No, but
evidence seems to point.
This cartoon is inconsistent. My God, the first cartoon in 45 years of Star Trek is inconsistent.
And other than that window, everything else is just so huge behind them. There's no scale. That window is all I'm going on.
Hey, there's no scale.
There's no scale.
Hey.
Okay, so we can get back to Hanna-Barbera. You never told about the Hanna-Barbera.
So Ephraim and Dot, I never got to finish the overview summary of the plot. Okay.
Got it.
Ephraim and Dot. Tardigrade and a little robot. Ephraim's the tardigrade trying to get in.
Oh, I would have known the names if I'd let you. Okay.
Yeah, well, there you go. You can never go back.
No. Nope.
Time moves inexorably forward.
This podcast is ruined.
I can't repair it. Gotta throw
about,
it away.
That was about 25 minutes ago.
I don't know if I can repair the podcast.
So Ephraim is trying to get in the Enterprise. We later find out, presumably, because Ephraim is keen on nesting and laying eggs.
Keen on nesting.
So
my name is Dan. Ephraim, I'm keen on nesting.
Ephraim, well, that's a perfectly reasonable thing to say.
No, you're not.
It's a perfectly
it's not a reasonable thing for me to say.
Well, keen on
nesting.
I mean, it sounds weird coming out of your mouth. It sounds perfectly natural coming out of my mouth. I'm going to argue that.
Okay.
But we'll leave it to the audience. Just write us a feedback at itsgotstartrek.com.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Jesse, and I'm keen on nesting.
Yeah. That does sound silly.
I don't know. Yeah.
All right. So you can write us in and tell us who says keen on nesting more naturally. You can rank it up there. So, okay, eventually Ephraim tangles with his robot, gets into the Enterprise, thinks
into like the warp core.
Yeah, into the warp core, lays some eggs, and then the robot comes, tosses her out, and then it starts basically the bulk of this episode is this grand fun journey through multiple events in the TOS timeline leading up all the way through to Star Trek III.
So, real quick, one of the I don't know who was saying. Oh, it was in that beginning video, which I don't know.
The narrator.
And there was like this weird. It was
black and white, like a 1950s film reel.
Right. It was supposed to imitate
telling you how to hide under your desk when the Russians dropped the nukes on us.
And I don't know if that reel was supposed to be showing to an audience other than us, or if it was all just like, "Yep, we're showing this to you. It's supposed to look like this. We're just doing that." I don't know. That was interesting, like sort of opening, like why was
it non-diegetic bizarreness?
Yeah. Anyways, so it was saying how the eggs that the eggs take a couple years to hatch. Eggs, yeah.
It was more than a couple years because that shit went from like. Some TOS all the way up to like Wrath of Khan.
And that's what I was wondering because
it went from the first Khan to the last Khan.
It went into Search for Spock.
And yeah. So you can't say that it's really that episode is canon because it's traveling through warp speed through all these events in Star Trek and it's all symbolic. It's symbolic of their journey, but it's not their actual journey.
But they might perceive
it. But it's somehow
there's some extra stuff with that Abraham Lincoln and like
We'll get to the references in a second because it is great just to read down the list of references that we saw. But you're not wrong. But I would argue that both the robot Dot and the tardigrade Ephraim presumably perceive time differently because the tardigrade can like fly through the mycelial network,
which I was also
can live in vacuum.
I was also confused why something going through the mycelial network can. Interact with something going through warp. Isn't that like two separate travel dimensions?
Maybe he was just trying to catch it because it can go through the mycelial network doesn't mean that it'll know where the Enterprise will be at any given time.
My
interpretation of the artistic interpretation of
story. I really want to say the artistic way was done. I really liked it. I'm not complaining, I'm just kind of curious.
When Star Trek gets very artistic, it can sometimes clash with the fan bases, ourselves included, enjoyment of picking apart things and closely examining the internal logic of the Star Trek universe. But in this case, I think one way to interpret it is just that it didn't know where the Enterprise was going, so it basically wanted to grab onto it so that it would be wherever it didn't want to lose the Enterprise. That's the whole thing.
But it was traveling, so you're saying it wasn't traveling on the mycelial network?
It was traveling on the urocelial network.
I think it was just hanging out in that warp bubble. It was using like little mycelial network jumps.
It was the urocelial.
Maybe it was just jumping from points, waiting for it to catch a wave. Jump to the
in
next
20
point,
years, they'll do a live remake of this. A live action remake.
Doing a very good job of following the Enterprise.
It was. And it was dramatic and intense and fun.
And Super Warp Highway is the mycelial network. It's like warp, but it's super warp.
It's a really fun sort of thing to watch because it's more like an old school kind of cartoon where it's just kind of happening. You don't have to, there's funny little bits that,
and it was kinetic. Zip, zip,
zip, it's all kinetic.
Kinetic.
Yeah.
It was fun.
But what I was originally saying though is my point with the whole egg thing is they were saying the eggs take a couple years for hatching, and that's kind of like related to the idea of the episode itself, which is taking place over the course of years, because it's easy to think all this happened like in the span of a few minutes or a day or something like this. But this is kind of like little reminders. It's kind of interesting how they tied that egg thing in with that, and I don't know. I just thought it was just kind of a neat episode that made you sort of look at it differently.
The Hanna-Barbera sound? Was that the one you wanted to know about?
Yeah.
So it happens at the same time as like a Warner Brothers sound. It's early on when Dot and Ephraim are kind of being, I forget who's chasing who at one point. I guess Dot is chasing Ephraim around the corridors. And they have like a Hanna-Barbera Flintstones, like almost like when Fred Flintstone would like run his legs real fast.
Well, there was one part where they landed in clothes, a bunch of clothes, like colored clothes or something.
And I think that's all in the same scene. And I can't remember exactly. I was trying to keep notes, but I didn't get them written down properly. Where there's a more Hanna-Barbera sound and then a more Warner Brothers sound. In terms like I can't mimic them, but like go back and watch it. Just go back and watch it and pay attention in your head and be like Warner Brothers, Hanna-Barbera. What's the difference? It's the leg whoop whoop whoops versus the non-diegetic like meow.
What's that one? What is the one with the leg whoop whoops? Our boops are like a bunch of like timpanis or something.
Yeah, it sounds like a marimba or something.
Yeah.
They do that. They have.
I think I actually know what you're talking about. And that actually, I think that
or
reminded
I just
me.
implanted a memory into you.
No. Oh. That's how it works. No, because I had this memory from earlier.
Time. I incepted
That's
you.
What you think
I incepted
happened.
You.
Don't incept me.
I totally incepted you.
Jesus.
So that's a little inception among friends.
That's a little inceptual of you. I was saying that I think I interpreted that as a Warner Brothers xylophone, but I can see what you're saying about
it. I think it's a Hanna-Barbera because right after that is a more Warner Brothers like goofy sound. But anyway, you can go back and look.
This is fascinating.
So just to run through the references.
Yeah. Oh, real quick.
It was saying
Dan's
got a point.
It was saying that the tardigrade is docile. The narrator was saying it's docile, but didn't that shit tear up a bunch of Klingons or something?
Only
or
when they were attacking it.
That was a different tardigrade.
But they were saying tardigrades are docile. That tardigrade was not docile.
When it was being attacked, it wasn't. But
it was still pretty mean when what's his name?
Stamets?
No, the captain at the time had it in a
Lorca, yeah.
Lorca had it in like a cage and it was being aggressive then too.
Because Lorca was a dickhead. An asshole from the mirror universe.
Okay.
Sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
The Terran universe.
Okay, fair enough.
And it got nicer once people treated it nicely and fed it water and pet it and scratched under its chin. You know, just got to get that right spot.
And it felt so bad for it when it was all bummed out. And you were like, oh no. Stamets was like, oh, he's bummed out.
It didn't like the mycelial network.
It shriveled. Mm. It all shriveled up.
It could have liked the urcelial network.
Yeah, you're right. Where have I heard that before?
Okay.
I don't know. I'm trying to make this joke land.
Give it some legs.
give it. Hey, Johnny boy.
Needs more legs.
Give that joke some legs. Hey, anybody in the back, you got some legs back there.
Give it a kickstand.
You look in the shed. Okay.
Look into shit?
The shed.
Oh.
The shed.
Look into shit? I thought you said, look into shit?
Your mind is in the gutter, sir.
Mm. Okay, so references that we saw, and I'm sure there are some that I've missed here, but we saw Khan, but both Khan and Space Seed.
Yeah, right.
And later the Wrath of Khan when they're fighting the Reliant.
Yeah.
So there's that whole Khan part. Mm-hmm. So we get to see both parts of Khan, which I think is... It's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it was like the first time you see Khan and the last time you see Khan.
And the first time you see it is the first time we also see Kirk and McCoy is in the background, I guess. So and I like that they did kind of an updated version of the TAS style.
Right?
Yeah. It's not exactly TAS style, but it kind of is in that.
It's reminiscent.
The color palette and the proportions of the characters.
You know, I didn't even put that together, but I think you're right.
And I thought that was pretty clever. There's a salt vampire from The Man Trap, which is a first season TOS show.
The Sulu with a sword.
Yeah, I said Sulu drunk on magic water and sword fighting.
You either
from the naked time.
You
naked
either time. Leave this boar blood bloodied or something.
Yeah, and it was of course the original audio, the stock from that those shows was used.
There were some tribbles.
Oh yeah, tribbles were in there.
How are the tribbles just chilling and not taking over the ship with their sex?
Those might have been some leftover tribbles.
Maybe they're just dead tribbles.
Just dead. Scotty just has a sack of dead tribbles shoved into a Jeffrey's tube.
Do you think they were just they were what's it called when an animal can't like a dog? Most donkeys you can't give birth. Donkeys.
Mules. A mule can't.
A mule's, what's it called?
Sterile.
Sterile. Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Do you think they're sterile tribbles? Do you think tribbles can be sterile?
Mule. Donkey, mule, horse.
Zebra.
Horse pony.
Tribbles?
Horse pony.
So tribbles can be, I'm sure they could breed them to be.
Maybe those are
they
sterile
did.
Tribbles.
I mean, we saw, there was in the, in More Tribbles, More Troubles, in TAS, they had that where they made them so they didn't breed, But in that case, they just got bigger and bigger and bigger until they exploded.
And they had that monster that ate the tribbles.
They had a tribble-eating monster.
The Gorax. I forget what it was called.
I think you're pretty close.
Something like that.
We also see Apollo from...
I don't know, Jim.
For Who Mourns
Spock,
for Adonis.
Are you a human anyway, where? Spock?
Are you doing your Jimmy Stewart again?
No, it's trying to do McCoy, but it turned into Jimmy Stewart.
You keep doing your Jimmy. It's a good Jimmy Stewart. Can you do the can you do the man who shot Liberty Valance?
Spock, are you a man or are you a beast?
it's starting to be a little Nicolas Cagey now, dude.
Oh man!
All right, Apollo from Who Mourns for Adonis, which is a second season TOS episode.
That's a weird one.
We swing by the Planet Killer. space ice cream cone
tube
killer machine, a doomsday machine, which is another second season.
There's a giant too, green hand sometimes.
Oh yeah, the green hand. I forget what that's from. Is that? Oh man. Damn it. I can't remember what that one's from, because I know giant space Abraham Lincoln is from. I think it's the it's the Savage Curtain, which is way. It's like that's like towards the end of the third season.
I don't think I've seen that one.
That's a crate. That's like an end of third season. That's why I thought going bonkers.
I thought that was some extra stuff.
No, that was
that one didn't even happen.
No, there's a giant space Abraham Lincoln. Space hand. They might be in the same episode.
Catch up on that one. They probably are.
We'll look it up. Oh,
third season.
And we see Commander Krug's Bird of Prey decloaking, and that's when it's in Star Trek III style, right before the Enterprise blows up, which is pretty intense. That whole like last portion of this, I know it's not a super long animation, but I found it very emotionally engaging and touching and upsetting and stuff, because there's the whole...
Totally.
By having the tardigrade eggs be placed in association with the ship, we wrap up the fates of those things in our minds, and so the tension is associated together. And if you're a longtime fan watching this, you know by this point, you know where this is going. You know what happens to this ship. It's going to get blown up, and so that makes you invest more in the eggs, because you're already invested in the ship, despite knowing precisely what end it's about to come to. But it was all, you know, the whole sequence was tense and animated really well, and it was emotional.
It was sorry, did I say blue hand? I meant green hand.
Yeah, you said green hand
because you said it right. Yeah, did you spend all this time trying to prove yourself wrong when you were right?
Yeah, I did.
I think you said yellow hand.
I know I didn't.
It's okay.
The big green hand is from the opening scene of the classic episode "Who Mourns for Adonis."
Oh, it's from that one. So yeah. Oh yeah.
And in case you're wondering, it's basically the hand of the god Apollo.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. I'm stupid because I totally already even mentioned that reference, and I totally forgot about that because
I gotta watch that one again.
Forgot to connect
that
those together.
A weird one.
It is a weird one, and that's maybe why I was remembering it all confused.
It's one of the weird ones.
What makes you think that Dot is the name of the robot? Is because it's all caps or something?
No, because they are called Dots. In Discovery, they're called Dots.
I feel
and they have periods.
I've seen all these episodes.
D period O.
I feel so ignorant because I've seen these episodes, but I don't remember shit.
Yeah, well, and sometimes you know, if the newer episodes we haven't seen as often because of the constraints.
But you have
got that can't remember shit syndrome.
Continuum. Yeah, kind. Time continuum.
CRS.
It's better than having a case of the sposdas.
Yeah, I know, right? That's the worst. I had that one time.
It is.
I was really annoying.
So there is one major error.
Uh-oh.
In this short track, which has driven people mad. Driven people both to the brink of madness.
That scream where the dude falls off the something scream.
The Wilhelm scream?
Yeah.
So people have been driven to the brink of madness and in fact gone over the brink of madness due to this huge...
I don't think I caught this error.
Glaring, upsetting error. I did catch it the first time I saw it.
It's going to be something weird.
No.
It's going to be normal.
I've only seen it once, so I should watch it again.
It's not. This is a big deal. And I know that the tone of my voice makes it sound like I'm being sarcastic.
It sounds like I'm full of shit.
But I'm not.
This is making it up.
I'm not.
Hyperbolizing.
I'm trying to find a way to get out of this so that the impact of me announcing what this error is, the audience probably, a lot of the people in the audience are screaming at their podcast players.
I'm about to lose it.
They're like, I know what he's talking about. Why won't he just fucking say it?
He's the worst.
Because it's entertainment. That's what.
So for the latter portion of this, for the
content.
The latter portion of this, let's preface this by pointing out that we're seeing one Enterprise throughout all of this, but we do see it in different refit configurations. And at the beginning of it, we see it in the quote unquote TOS configuration. They're using the Discovery version, right? They're using the model of the Enterprise that was redesigned for Discovery, but it's the TOS version, right? Round nacelles, orange, pink, glowing ball nacelles, old school deflector dish.
The 1701, no letter.
Yeah. Yeah, but then you have the movie refit, which is still the 1701.
Right.
Still the 1701, no letter. That's the ship through the end of Star Trek III. And they refit it for the movie, and they upgraded a little bit in Star Trek II. And so the animation changes to show that ship. And in fact, if I understand correctly, I think it's the first and perhaps only depiction of the movie era TOS ship in animated form, at least, you know, in official canon, quote unquote, studio produced Star Trek. So they have the ship refits going out throughout the whole plot of this animation. But for some reason, when they show the refit one, it says 1701-A.
Oh, no.
Mm.
I didn't notice that. That is
the wrong fucking ship.
That is very wrong.
We don't get that ship until the end of Star Trek 4.
Yeah.
Don't really do anything with it until Star Trek 5. Yeah.
It's easy to say, oh, that's nothing. But you know what? It's like, that's a pretty big...
There's so much care.
That is quite significant.
There's so much love and care put into the other parts of this episode in terms of getting the positioning of characters in a room matching that of basically, you know, roughly matching that of the original series episode in terms of all that stuff and getting the original audio and stuff. So it's a glaring error. Mm. And Michael Giacchino? Giacchino?
I'm not Giacchino? Even... Notice I haven't even been trying.
That guy.
Yeah, smart guy. He was asked about that, and apparently he was mortified.
Oh, no.
Truly
oh,
really? Mortified that this oh. happened.
Are you just making this up?
I'm not making it up. He was mortified that this happened, but was... He put it off to being like, it's just, I'm sorry, I was so busy. It just slipped through the cracks. That was like the one thing that slipped through the cracks.
He's not going to any convention.
That reminded me for some reason of, I was watching some YouTube interview of Trey Parker and Matt Stone. They were talking about Team America. And they were saying like they couldn't do another movie because they'd probably just die because of doing puppet movie.
Yeah.
Just because it's so intense to make a puppet movie. But they were saying, like, yeah, it was like 18-hour days of just non-stop, like, forget-to-eat kind of activity.
Yeah.
And that had to do something with what we were talking about.
Yeah, with making a animated short and making errors in the process because
it's only
oh, right, because there's so much going on,
it's
right?
Not even 10 minutes, but I'm sure it took a long time to make.
Oh, yeah. There was a lot of, like, the animation was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really excellent in this. And it's kind of interesting that both
Tholian web.
I forgot about the Tholian web. There's a ton of references that I haven't mentioned. So I don't know if you guys remember any others because the audience is
did see the Tholian
web. They're no doubt going to write in and say, like, well, you forgot about this. You forgot about the Tholian web.
Well,
what happened to the Tholian web?
You forgot about the Tholian web.
Or even more subtle references that we didn't remember. But it's kind of it's cool. Both of these short treks had to do with TOS. I mean, tied directly to TOS in a way. I mean, Harry Mudd is a TOS character. I know he was on Discovery as well, and this is more in the Discovery era. But with the Android thing, that kind of ties into the TOS.
Yeah, totally.
And this is a love letter to TOS.
It's really good.
It's pretty fantastic.
According to closed captioning, at the end, they were chittering.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it was the tardigrade or if it was...
Probably the tardigrades because the baby tardigrades because...
They chitter. Yeah,
because
these robots more ping.
A tardigrade is not an insect, but...
An insect is a tardigrade. But
no, 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 no. No.
Is a tardigrade an arthropod?
It's a go to your room a pod.
I don't know. It's a little creature. It's not an insect, though.
Does it have a spine?
No.
But it's feeling fine.
But it's not...
All right.
It'd be awesome if it was a little tiny spine thing. I don't know.
Maybe like in sardines. Maybe it's an arthropod sardines, of some sort. You can eat sardine spines. Have you ever eaten those? You can come with the sardines.
No, sir.
Why do you say it like that?
Sardines.
You, you ever eat the sardine spines?
Some people say mayonnaise. They don't say mayonnaise. They don't say mayonnaise. They say mayonnaise.
Do you say mayonnaise?
I say mayonnaise.
People can say
mayonnaise. No, now I'm just saying it weird. No, I say...
People can say whatever they like to say.
I say mayonnaise. Mayonnaise.
Why aren't you saying it properly?
Mayonnaise.
That's what I used to say.
Mayonnaise. Mayonnaise.
Meanies.
Many regional dialects.
I'm not saying accents. That one's better than the other. I was just saying, people say that stuff.
Yeah. All right. It's just there are certain implications you keep saying. People
how do you say
I didn't. You're the one. Maybe you're the one with the problem, man.
How do you say Heinz 57 sauce?
I'm doing it. What?
Heinz 57.
He wants to know how you say ketchup.
How do you say that?
Ketchup.
How do you say ketchup? Well, that's different.
I don't say ketchup.
How do you say mustard?
Mustard.
How do you say wash the windows?
Wash the windows? I don't say that.
You say wash the windows?
How do you say Washington, D.C.?
Washington? No, I don't say Washington. Washington. No. Washington.
No, I brought it up because of the chittering is something you often associate with insects or insectoids.
Or in sexual relationships.
No.
There's a subreddit for that. I don't remember the name.
Sweet.
But if you look it up, insect business. In some sort of just type in, go to Google and type in insect business.
not on this laptop.
type in chittering insect business. XXX. You'll be right. Whatever your preferences are, you'll find something in that menu.
Another
that suits your fancy.
Another shot that reminded me of the Big Enterprise satellite dish. There was about at the beginning, it was like running by Ephraim, and there was that big satellite dish. There's that satellite dish. Yeah. And then it ran into asteroid.
The deflector array.
Yeah, it's fun to look at that thing. I wonder how often they hit asteroids and shit and break things off.
Well, they don't because they have a deflector.
That one hit an asteroid, though, in this episode. Or it was like not an asteroid. It was like a floating rock. But what's the difference? I don't know. I'm sure there's something.
Maybe that's another error.
Error. So the deflector dish is supposed to use energy dark matter to you can push it through subspace.
Quantum dark matter. What a fool.
Why would you think of such a thing?
Yeah, I'm sure it's obviously not what you want. It shoots little black holes out. It just shoots a steady stream of black holes, and they suck up all the juice. They would make that noise
from like the Matrix when Neo like was turning into a robot on the inside when his mind was being freed. It got all digital. He was screaming.
Yeah, he said robot.
And the screams turned into ones and zeros, and it was like all digital, like, and it's like that when you shoot the black holes at people.
Do you think black holes make sound?
They don't make any noise.
Do you think they're digital?
Digital black holes?
I'm not clear exactly where you're getting at, but I respect that. I respect the effort.
Wait, why black holes? I never said anything about black holes.
You said shooting black holes.
You said black holes would make a sound like
the black hole gun would make a sound.
Okay, the black hole gun.
No.
This is ridiculous.
Okay, yeah.
I was going to go there and you took it from me.
I know. Well, was, you know, you didn't miss much. It's just kind of long.
So, any last things on this? The music was great, unsurprisingly. Maybe perhaps somewhat surprisingly, a tremendous use of original variations on the original scores from throughout TOS and the movies, a little bit, hints of it, but put together in a very interesting, complex, layered way that sort of takes you on a journey along with Ephraim and Dot.
How did Dot get out when the ship blew up? It seemed like he was done for.
Well, the ship...
But he got out.
He's a robot.
But the ship didn't completely blow up, if you remember your Star Trek thing.
Yeah, because it, you know...
It kind of like starts blowing up portions of it.
You said, if you remember your Star Trek...
It's like a teacher saying, like, if you remember your Kierkegaard.
No,
making an argument.
Watching,
if you're not a complete idiot, you'll know what I'm talking.
I'm referencing Kierkegaard.
Watching the episode that short trek,
yes,
the whole ship was engulfed in explosion.
But then you see what you see in Star Trek 3, which is the bulk of the ship is falling into the atmosphere of the planet, and then it explodes in the
atmosphere. Yeah, I'm just saying that, like, that's not... It looked a little more dramatic. Not more dramatic, but more destructive.
Your critique
animated
is both valid, and I agree with it. I think the way it was animated made it seem like the initial explosion was bigger than it was either in Star Trek 3 or than it ends up proving to be in this episode. It was misleading for the purpose of tension, no doubt.
Yeah.
But that tension is somewhat deflated when you've realized you've had the rug pulled from you. When you realize that there's been tomfoolery afoot, there's been psychological manipulation on the part of the director to make you perceive one thing and say, you know what? See, it was reasonable that Dot got out.
The robot got out.
We thought all the eggs and the robot were dead.
The robot saved those eggs.
But it turned out we were wrong, because the robot came out and then he had I don't want to gender the robot. The robot had saved everything. And then you see the bulk of the Enterprise fall into the atmosphere. So I agree.
The Genesis plan.
That I think there's a bit of a... overuse of the animation license there. I think that they could have done that a little differently and still maintain the tension.
Doggone it, people like me.
Yeah, just keep
good
saying.
Enough. I'm keep smart saying. Enough.
It's a mantra. They call it. They Doggone call it a mantra it. For a reason. You got to keep saying it, and one day it might become true.
Oh, oh. Oh, oh.
Okay. Well, anything else? Any other business or
an intense emotional roller coaster? Oh, that's it.
Oh, so is that your tagline for this episode?
Yeah,
Ephraim and Don.
Yep. Sure.
All right. Well. Okay. So we hope you have enjoyed this.
I hope you hated it.
Somewhat confused, somewhat perplexing. Yeah, discussion of both the escape artist and Ephraim and Dot.
Well, they're like 24 minutes in, in
check
total.
Out,
so
two short
you know.
Treks.
Check out the short treks. They're worth. They're
the
worth
short treks are
out,
fun. You know, yeah, you know. Go check them out.
They don't take up too much time.
Yeah.
Don't short
be
your.
Like, wait, what happened? I'll just watch it again. That's
don't,
okay.
Don't short your robort. Watch more short treks. Bort. Mort.
Blort.
Blurred.
Blurred.
This is really upsetting. All of this, all this is upsetting, but entertaining, no doubt. You know, that's we don't promise
content.
Let's hope so.
We promise exactly. We promise content. Yeah. That's the podcaster promise. Is,
all that matters
is the social contract that podcasters have with their audience is just to provide content.
Some people they don't do that much content. We, it's yeah. not a very good podcast.
We cannot promise more than that. But that's a lot.
They're not content, so they pretend to do it.
Oh, see, you could have done something with them. They're not content, but then we give them content. But you chose not to go in that direction because of...
Because I said pro-tent instead of content. Because pro and con.
Oh, okay.
Except I made it sound like pretend.
Whoa, dude.
Yeah, okay, you did. You made
You're
it sound like pretend,
word,
so the joke did not
wizard.
Make any sense.
It makes sense. It was like a rhyme like rhymers make.
Rhymers.
I don't like the way you say that word. Rhymers. It makes me a little uncomfortable. But all right. So
next week,
we are going to go where
to Times Square.
None of us have gone before on this podcast.
Oh, that's right.
To a cool party.
I've been to cool parties.
I've been to a lot of. I've hosted some really
Me
cool
too.
Parties.
That's I have
true.
Too.
I've been to this very house.
I had some cool parties.
So, next week we are going to do something we haven't done before.
I've worn lots of shoes.
It's not as interesting as I'm making it out to sound. We're just going to do a season two TNG episode. We just realized all of a sudden
we've never done one.
Jesse noticed that. He said, "You know, we haven't done any season two.
We've done TNG. A lot of later." TNG episodes. Yeah. We haven't done
easy to overlook
any like yeah. one or two.
So we are going to do Times Square
because people always are like the first few seasons of TNG are bad, and so
That's
when you,
false.
So when you want to watch something, you're like, well, let's go for the gusto with season one. And you were saying something similar to this earlier, Patrick.
Yeah,
actually,
it was.
Very similar. So I took
basically,
what you said.
Basically the same thing.
I said, but I took. I realized that I look sounds like I'm
me,
saying the same thing.
You're
but I thought
me
it,
credit,
I thought. I thought I was spinning it enough, but it didn't. It sounded
Turned
exactly.
Out you
like,
didn't.
I
you
did
said
though.
Exactly what I said, which is the tendency is to either watch quote unquote good TNG from season three onward, or to be like, well, let's watch something crazy in season one. So
well,
you tend to skip out on season
you
two.
You implied
sometimes.
Some of that. You didn't explicitly say that part.
Okay, this is irrelevant. Okay. This is irrelevant because we are doing it next week. We are talking about Times Squared. It's season two
There's nothing
of
you
TNG.
Can do about it.
It's episode 13.
Resistance is futile. You are irrelevant.
Yeah. All right. Times Squared. That's a good one. It's a weird Picard. It's upsetting and interesting
Picard.
And weird and sci-fi and
Your
cool.
Borg version is not irrelevant. Your Borg version is very relevant.
What?
Because so, they call people irrelevant, or they say things are irrelevant, but Borg is not irrelevant.
I don't know.
Reason.
They don't treat their drones so nice.
No.
They're pretty expensive.
And they're pretty dumb. They're just like, oh, we don't want to assimilate them now, so we'll just let them walk around our compound.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah, maybe
we'll have to discuss
Borg.
That episode at one point or another.
Stupid yeah. Borg.
Okay,
stupid
so Borg. Next week, Times Squared. We look forward to having that discussion and then recording it and putting it onto the internet. For you people to listen to, and then that's how this thing goes. That's how this whole enterprise works. All right.
Enterprise.
Oh, hey, you said it. You said the name.
oh man, right. That bummed me out.
Okay, have fun. I apologize for that. All right, then we'll, that'll be good for now, and we'll talk to everybody next week. Bye bye.
It's got Starch.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach somewhere.
If I had any money, I'd be sipping jippers on a beach.
Jippers on a beach.
Jippers on a beach.
Jippers on a beach.